One executive last year had described it as basically just an Easter holiday every single day. And it was just like that was just the new normal. It was just a holiday every day. So there's no more, you don't see that sort of spike. It's just that plateau, and then companies just needing to run flat out to meet that demand.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you are in the world. This is the Digital Supply Chain Podcast, the number one podcast focusing on the digitization of supply chain. And I'm your host, Global Vice President at SAP, Tom Raftery. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Digital Supply Chain Podcast. My name is Tom Raftery with SAP, and with me on the podcast today, I have my special guest, another Tom. Tom, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure thing, Tom. It's great to be on the show today. Tom Madrecki with the Consumer Brands Association. In that role, I represent the collective interests of the consumer packaged goods industry from a supply chain standpoint.
Okay, and tell us a little bit about the Consumer Brands Association for people who might be unaware.
Yeah, and I wouldn't blame you if you were just sort of like shockingly unfamiliar or something like that, depending on what circles you travel in. It's not some huge expectation, right? But of course, the Consumer Brands Association represents the sort of aisles A through Z of the consumer goods industry, whether that's companies like PepsiCo, Kellogg's, General Mills, others, a range of companies throughout the supply chain.
Okay, and what you released a report recently, the Economic Pulse report. What were the top level findings of that?
Yeah. And I mean, I think the thing that really comes through is that demand levels continue to be at like sort of a record high. So you look at year over year growth in the CPG industry, you're talking anywhere from, certain, of course, it depends on the company and the specific sector, right? But
sure.
But overall, it's 9.4% year over year. And that's a drop from the 20% some odd panic buying mode that was in March 2020. But what's really interesting when you look at the numbers recently in the last month or two is you see another spike in demand that's nearing that record buying level in March. The reasons for that, I'm sure that there are, there are many. They're sort of layered in with other disruptions to the supply chain, other sort of just challenges with the sort of marketplace at the moment as people sort of come back post-vaccine or, availability, other things like that. And the market is, growing again, other things like that. But the demand just continues to be there.
Okay. And is that causing any issues?
I don't think it necessarily is issues, but what I think it does is it shows, the further strain on the supply chain, right? So like when you go to that panic buying in March of last year, obviously there was, that moment in time when consumers would go to the store and they couldn't find their kids' favorite cereal or the toilet paper that they exactly wanted. Maybe there was toilet paper on the shelf, but all of a sudden it was the roll of toilet paper, like the industrial supplies taken from the airport. And so there was some challenges then. And I don't think you're seeing that now. But what you are seeing is you're seeing a host of things sort of get gummed up in the system, whether that's port delays, whether that's a scarcity in the transportation marketplace, and really like maybe some of the tightest transportation market that many folks have ever seen. And there's really no sign of that abating necessarily, because in the U.S. There's a driver shortage. There just simply aren't enough trucks. There's now a shipping container shortage because of just how the global supply chain has sort of orchestrated that. Pallets are in scarce supply, so people can't get enough of those to put the goods on the truck. And then you have other commodity cost increases at the moment as well. So wood pulp is up. What does that mean? Well, that means that toilet paper is going to be more expensive. And so there's a host of commodity challenges just as everything happens. You layer on the Colonial Pipeline attack that just happened in the U.S. from a cybersecurity perspective. That took out pretty much the East Coast's gas supply. And so there's a scarcity of fuel. And even is what's just sort of interesting about that is that you have these events that happen. And then you have places, I saw something on a friend's story on Instagram, but people were running out of gas or like waiting in long lines in Florida. Florida is not even supplied by the Colonial Pipeline. So there's sort of this mentality, right, where like you have things that are happening and then the marketplace is just sort of absorbing it and it's impacting consumer behavior. And so that's really, I think, what some of this is due to, and then it just sort of layers on top of each other.
Okay, and how is that affecting costs then?
Yeah, so the costs across the board are rising. We're actually going to be releasing and looking at some of the cost increase numbers that are going to come out, I think, this morning. Not quite ready yet.
A couple of weeks ago by the time this podcast gets published.
we can dive into that. You can draw that out for your viewers. But everything that I have heard from member companies, executives, is that costs are rising. I mentioned the wood pulp example. The same is true for steel. The same is true for aluminum. The same is true for corn or whatever the commodity is. Really across the board, you know, whether it's food, ag, more on like the chemical side of things, everything is just rising. And you've seen many CPG companies make statements to, Wall Street or to investor community or other things like that, where they are going to have to consider taking price in the marketplace or raising that to accommodate. Like, there's only so much margin within the CPG industry and the ability for companies to absorb that. They've also, in recent years, not done that. And so there's sort of a reckoning that has to happen at some point, right? Sort of the straw that broke the camel's back. You saw over the last year that the CPG industry delivered tremendously for consumers, but they also incurred tremendous costs of that as well, in terms of just the ramp up in production, the running 24/7 model. The way that I've always described it is that you're talking about factories that maybe were really dialed in from a operation standpoint. They're running, let's say, 96% capacity or something. They're really humming along, and then you bump up demand, so they're going to run 110% capacity, and then it's just sustained. One executive last year had described it when I was panic buying, sort of settled into that new normal time frame, and he had described that uptick as basically just an Easter holiday every single day. And it was just that was just the new normal. It was just a holiday every day. So there's no more. You don't see that sort of spike. It's just that plateau, and then companies just needing to run flat out to meet that demand.
And is that sustainable?
They've done it thus far. And I think that it is sustainable with the right level of investment on those companies' part. And certainly they're taking their host of their measures. They're thinking about, how do they redesign their network? How do they, implement new technology? What are the things, what are the steps and actions that they can take? There's a lot of emphasis right now in the industry placed on visibility throughout the supply chain, having end-to-end, whether it's like a control tower type view, really everything that ladders up to a notion of a, sort of a supply network, and being able to have less of that sort of chain mindset, more of a networked one, which I think, first from a, sort of a visual level, it is more resilient, right? You can imagine the sort of transition from something that's linear to more like a spider web network type thing. And it has that inherent resiliency to it. And it gives you different options, the ability to bounce back quickly when times get tough. And so you see companies taking steps to become more resilient and to be more competitive, especially because supply chain is so much increasingly a differentiator in the marketplace. That that ability to meet your retail customers' needs and ultimately the consumers' needs is what sets you apart from the other companies in a very competitive CPG environment. So they're doubling down on all of the things that you would expect them to, and sort of retooling, thinking about how they can better collaborate with those retail partners. The other piece of this, and I think that where the Consumer Brands Association comes in and what we've sort of called for over time, is that supply chains don't operate in a vacuum. They are influenced by this sort of macro environment of policy, of government, of, the things, the marketplace just in general, which is in essence telegraphed or influenced by policy as well. One of the things that the Consumer Brands Association has done over the last year is draw increasing awareness at the government level or at the policymaking level to the supply chain. Supply chain is, fun fact, not the hottest topic in normal times in Washington.
What?
not the thing that people are like, ooh. So yeah, but I don't know. We've made supply chain sexy or not, but it is more and more a conversation that's happening in Washington, because I think people are aware of the fact, maybe for the first time, that there is this thing that facilitates them getting the toilet paper or their kid's favorite cereal when they go to the grocery store, right? So because of that increasing awareness, I think that we are also trying to help policymakers understand that the policies that they put in place, the decisions they make, that shapes that environment. And so there are steps that could be taken to, I think, essentially just make a better environment for the supply chain and to, you know, better facilitate that, to remove some of the frictions along the way. I always talk about it in terms of removing the time, cost, and complexity from business, so that consumers are, you know, able to have affordable, accessible, and available products. That's sort of the overall arc. I think that what you'll see and what we have specifically called for is that, you know, really it's all about leadership at some basic level. A lot of supply chain policy, if you can call it supply chain policy, is really kind of haphazard. It's not done with any degree of intentionality. Maybe certain countries like China aside, really sort of like large scale industrial policy, we'll put that in another bucket. But the, you know, at least in the U.S., right, you have transportation investment happening for certain reasons. You have the different border, you know, controls and regulations for one reason. You have food safety stuff for another reason. You have ag funding and tax policy in one area. They're not necessarily aligned or sort of strategically coordinated. You don't necessarily have agencies talking to each other. And so, you know, really what we have called for, and that the pandemic has sort of exacerbated or shown to be the case, is that there needs to be more of that talking. There needs to be more of that coordination. So we've called for what we've called an Office of Supply Chain. It's actually in President Biden's infrastructure proposal that he's put out there for consideration. So we're really excited about that and the potential to create that office. I think that it would be a real step in the right direction in terms of elevating the profile of supply chain. And the only thing, I mean, like some people have said, well, we don't want another government office. Like, there's always this sort of pushback, right? Like, you don't want like more government. Like, we're like, just to be very clear, we're not calling for more government. There is not a lack or scarcity of supply chain policy. In fact, there is, I mean, maybe you could maybe make a case that there's too much at times, but that the policy that's there isn't laddering up to anything in a sort of strategic fashion. And so the role that we imagine an office to play is one that is able to, again, it's coordinate, it's to break down the siloing, it's just to have that overarching role. And it's also to serve as a conduit to the private sector to glean the best information that the private sector is able to provide and say, like, this is what's actually happening in the marketplace right now. Commodity costs are increasing, transportation isn't available. Like, how can we influence that? And how can we sort of steer that back to normal or a closer normal than, you know, maybe the present, so that consumers ultimately aren't the ones bearing the costs of that.
We'll be right back.
Elevate your brand with the Sustainable Supply Chain Podcast, the exclusive voice in supply chain sustainability. Last year, this podcast's episode were downloaded 113,000 times by senior executives across the world, with listeners concentrated in the EU, North America, and Asia. Become a sponsor. Lead the conversation. Contact me for sponsorship opportunities and turn downloads into dialogues. Act today. Influence the future. Okay, and would that be something that would fall under, for example, the Department of Commerce, or would it be a separate department of its own, so a new Department of Supply Chain?
Yeah, so the Biden's infrastructure proposal includes it under the Department of Commerce, along with $50 million in funding for it. Whether it's in the executive office of the president or commerce or somewhere else, I am less, I guess, concerned about that and trust that people will find the appropriate home for it. And more about, you know, what is its role? What is the sort of the, you know, the degree to which it's empowered to actually carry things out? One of the things that I have seen in my decade plus in Washington is that you often have times where there are policy decisions that are arguably in the best interest of the country, right? Like this could be, like, these steps could be done. We could reduce congestion in cities that are caused by urban delivery. Let's just throw that out there as an example. The Department of Commerce might know a lot of insight about the growth of e-commerce, the growth of, you know, demand for that. The Department of Transportation may actually be the ones in charge of some of those things and how to facilitate or better enable, like, reduce congestion in cities. Just because commerce has a good idea doesn't mean that they necessarily want to roll that idea out if it's going to step on the Department of Transportation's toes. And sort of what we're getting at with an Office of Supply Chain is like, guys, if it's a good idea, don't sort of like this internal politicking and the dynamics of like, oh, is it this person's responsibility or that person's responsibility? It shouldn't really matter. It should just be about doing what's right for the American consumer, which is ultimately right, the American citizen or the sort of the, you know, the constituent to which government should serve anyway. So it's really, I think, just about breaking down some of those silos and meeting consumer needs.
Okay. And is the increased demand, I think you said it was 9% most recently, is that likely to stay? Or, you know, you talked at the start about, you know, people getting their vaccines and now going out a little more. Do you think it will return to kind of the normal that was there before all this started and demand will drop again? Or where do you see that going?
Yeah, so we actually looked at this very issue recently from the economic research side. And I think that what we see is that there is no, let's say, return when you talk about like the new normal versus like what was. There's no sudden just like bounce back, like, oh, well, that was a weird blip. And then it sort of settled back in. What you actually see is that the pandemic has permanently shifted consumer sentiment and thus changed consumer behavior overall. So consumers during the pandemic, for example, were increasingly exposed to e-commerce grocery delivery or just the availability of delivery services in general, whether it was for, you know, food that they were going to take out or anything. So the world in which the consumer lives has been now shaped by this. And yeah, they, you know, people really want to go back to restaurants. So they want to travel again or they want to. And so, yes, you'll see that. But there's also a realization, let's just take e-commerce and grocery as an example, like, wow, I suddenly saved a lot of time by ordering online and I got to add everything that was in my old cart to this cart. It took me like 15 minutes that I just was on a phone and somebody brought me groceries instead of me spending an hour and a half with my kid, right? I have a 14-month-old, like in the car, like going to the grocery store, having him like literally eat the box of cereal while I go around the store. Like suddenly this is a game changing thing, right? And I was the person that was very adamant pre-pandemic that like I loved going to the grocery store. I worked as a chef at one point. I like looking at the fish. I like picking up all the produce and like being present. But there is something to be said about the convenience aspect and the other benefits of that. And so there's a stickiness to e-commerce that I think will continue. And we've seen that play out in sort of the consumer research side. And so that's just one example of this behavior that's been changed. But you also see changing dynamics about what consumers want from a product perspective. Companies have already adapted to that throughout the pandemic, right? You have people buying. I think the way that it was put it to me is that, you know, it's not just that consumers, let's say, are buying, different types of athletic beverages or sort of, you know, things that are of nutritional value. They also bought a home gym during the pandemic. Or there's some crazy statistic that's like 10 million. I want to say it's like 10 million, like 10 million new pets were acquired during the pandemic in the U.S. So it's
wow,
right? Like what you acquired that dog or you got that cat, that's not going away. And so now all of a sudden you're buying, your food for it or all of the materials that you need, the poop, whatever it is. And so this behavior has been shaped by what happened during the pandemic. You also see this play out in, and I think where companies are looking at and how they have to modify their operations, how do they work with their retail customers? What are the different sort of demand and fulfillment cycles look like? You also see this play out in the context of the consumer trip and what that looks like. So you also see changes where, you know, pre-pandemic, there was maybe a steady, you go to the grocery store, you get your, you know, your $150, $200 basket or something like that. And then you go home and you go back the next week and you basically buy the same thing. What you see right now, and I think that you'll continue to see, is that some shoppers are relying on e-commerce for frequent ordering. So they're going to place a smaller order. Mm-hmm. And I think part of this has to do with the cost of shipping and the, you know, the other incentives that are there, right? And so there's something to be maybe tweaked or considered in that. But you'll see customers order more frequently in a smaller quantity for things that are perishable, for things that are, you know, just of the moment, or maybe they just suddenly ran out of milk and they just want to get milk, right? So you get these smaller, you know, orders that are more frequent from an e-commerce perspective, but then you have a massive order that they go out to the store to get, and they're going to buy like the bulk size toilet paper. They're going to load up on baby wipes. They're going to buy all the shampoo they can, whatever the case is. And they're going to do that once a month, or they're going to do that once every 2 months. And so the retailer is now on the receiving end of that, where they need to be prepared for either, you know, instant, you know, immediate fulfillment of these specific items at any given moment that the consumer wants, and they need to, you know, get those from a last mile perspective out to them. And then at the same time, they need to be prepared for the sudden, you know, bulk order. And so there's sort of two different things happening that are very different from what was, when it was sort of a balanced, more maybe more predictable environment prior to the pandemic.
Okay. And what's the impact of all this on the delivery companies?
Yeah. I mean, and I don't want to, you know, speak, I actually used to work for UPS, so I don't want to speak on behalf of like my old employer or something like that. But I think that what you have seen happen throughout the pandemic and sort of scale back through the supply chain, CPGs are trying to adapt to what retailers need. What sort of, you know, how do you predict or increasingly know consumer demand? I think there's a whole opportunity actually in that, where you see things where it's, you know, more of like a predictive mindset that actually transitions to a, you have a ton of information about the consumer at the retailer level. There's a host of demand sensing tools. I think anybody that has gone on to an Amazon or a Google or other platforms knows that suddenly the thing that you talked about in the room 5 seconds ago all of a sudden shows up on your social media feed. And you're like, that is scary, but also thank you. I actually really appreciate that deal, and I'm going to add it to my cart. And so there's a host of demand sensing and, you know, sort of analytical tools that I think that can benefit everyone throughout that ecosystem, CPGs included. It's just the ability to share that with the manufacturer so that they're on the same page as the retailer. The retailer is adapting, like I said, to this changed e-commerce environment. The thing that hasn't quite been figured out, I think, from a margin perspective, really, is how to do that last mile really well. And I think that one of the reasons for that is that, you know, or I shouldn't say one of the reasons for that, but one of the expressions of that is that you have all of these different models in place right now. People are still trialing it, testing it, sort of ideating through what works, what doesn't. So you see click and collect. You see buy online, pick up in the store. You see, you know, actual ship to home. You see sort of consolidated or like sort of frequent replenishment type models where it's more like a subscription or other things. So like there's a host of different things that people, I think, are trying to explore to get at how do you figure out the last mile cost piece of it. I don't think anybody has done that perfectly, but it's an area, I think, of increasing sort of investment, certainly. You see a lot of investment dollars flow into the space. And so there's just sort of, I think, renewed interest in figuring that out. Who the winner is, you know, remains to be seen.
Fair enough. Tom, we're coming towards the end of the podcast now. Is there any question that I've not asked or any topic we've not touched on that you think it's important for people to be aware of?
I mean, we touched on the demand side of things and the cost side. That's just extremely top of mind, I think, right now. And I think it ties back to, in many ways, the, you know, this notion of like an office of supply chain. Like there's a sort of a, you know, the economic cycles of the, you know, the world, of other things like that. Leaving it all on the private companies to resolve it, by all means, like the supply chain professionals at CPG companies love to solve problems. They will work their way out of anything. These are some of the most sophisticated and talented supply chains in the world. And so, yes, they will resolve it. But there is an opportunity, I think, to undergird those efforts or to support them with the right level of policymaking. And then again, not is to say that it should, you know, stretch into the bounds of dictating something or saying that this should be a certain way. But it's to it's really at the end of the day to recognize the importance of supply chains, the growing importance of supply chains, the fact that to remain competitive in a globalized modern world, you need to have skilled manufacturing labor. You need to have transportation and connectivity across across that manufacturing space. You need to recognize that really the supply chain consists of everything from the farmers to the labor that is picking tomatoes in the fields, to the people that are canning those, to the people that are transporting those, to people that are putting those on the shelf. Like, all of that needs to work if you're going to actually go have the quality of life where you go out to the store and you can, you know, just buy your can of tomatoes or whatever that is. So I think recognition of that, and then getting back to the basics of like, how do you support that environment? And sort of it's time to revisit that and think through how do we best enable that?
Okay, superb. Tom, if people want to know more about yourself, Tom Madrecki, or about the Consumer Brands Association or any of the things that we talked about on the podcast today, where would you have me direct them?
Sure thing. It's consumerbrandsassociation.org. We've also released a number of different studies in the supply chain space. There's one on the sort of future of supply chain from a consumer packaged goods company's perspective, in terms of which technologies they're going to see as enabling that future environment, as well as a study on supply chain policy and making some recommendations there. And so be sure to check those out when you go online.
Superb. Superb. Tom, that's been great. Thanks a million for coming on the podcast today.
Definitely. Thanks so much, Tom.
Okay, we've come to the end of the show. Thanks everyone for listening. If you'd like to know more about digital supply chains, head on over to sap.com/digital supply chain or simply drop me an email to tom.raftery@sap.com. If you like the show, please don't forget to subscribe to it in your podcast application of choice to get new episodes as soon as they're published. Also, please don't forget to rate and review the podcast. It really does help new people to find the show. Thanks. Catch you all next time.